Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Alien Theorists Theorizing Case File 348.
Question mark.
Twisted Tales.
Is that not right? To a friend of a friend of a friend.
You said it like a question mark, like we told you like three times.
you put the Zoolander fucking spin on it.
Because I instantly forget, dude.
He will read anything you put on that teleprompter.
Ron Burgundy.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
This one's going to be the closest to a power hour. The only difference is we all have a little something planned. So if this is your first case file, listen.
No pre-production, so we all just might have the same story by happen chance. Yeah. Is it happen chance? Happenstance?
Happenstance?
Happy just dance.
Happens. Do a happy dance. It'll be 15 minutes long and we'll fucking go in the hot tub.
Yeah. I like it.
Before we start, actually, I want to tell a quick story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Is this how you're starting yours? Okay. Hold on. Let me buckle up here. You're not getting me. Continue. All right. Hold on. All right. I'm all ears.
No, it's different. I'm telling you, it's different. No, what if I was to tell you that there was a mysterious case that involves an ice cream truck? A taxi driver.
Sure.
International students.
Yeah.
The Hells Angels.
Okay.
And the RCMP. Would you believe me?
It sounds like a Stephen King story.
Sounds like enough to shut down an entire city.
Would you believe me that this same person, the name, last name was Winters. He drove an ice cream truck.
I don't think it was an ice cream truck. I think it was just like an ice truck.
It said Mr. Ice on it.
That's
so it's just
cool.
A refrigerated truck.
Like it looked like something straight out of fucking like the Joker would be driving.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Ice.
Yeah.
And this
had a giant clown face on the front.
This ice truck driven by Mr. Winters was parked precariously across both lanes of an only bridge into a medium-sized city in Canada, which therefore led to the shutdown of the entire roadway for 12 hours. Mm. Would you believe me?
Seems like an infrastructural oversight.
I just lived it.
Yeah.
And on the back handle of this car was a hook. when the cops showed up. That's the story. That's a local story that just happened today.
Today.
What? It does today. It does feed into mine. Let's talk about that. So today, this kind of works perfect intro. So Roy Winter, this guy is, older guy. We know nothing. This is breaking news. It's basically a basic domestic terrorist attack that happened today. That was thwarted.
Manifesto and all.
So this guy, Roy Winter, you can look him up. He posted his the longest Facebook manifesto post.
12 pages.
Long. And He basically, it starts talking about like how the RCMP, the Hells Angels, Kelowna Cabs are all working together or individually to ruin his life.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like let's talk about that for a second, because like these are three semi like. We all know Hell's Angels criminal organization.
Dude,
we
big
know
taxi, that cabs, big taxi, we know, huge criminal organization,
especially in BC.
Yeah,
it's got criminal implications.
100%.
And a lot of times, who's policing the police? Right, like these guys a lot of times I know from, you know, for a fact, some of these guys are in cahoots with some shitty people.
So this guy writes his manifesto. He outlines what seemingly starts as a traffic ticket that he received that he tried to dispute. As you know, they wouldn't take his evidence. He went to traffic court. They weren't on the record, he said, because of the clock. In Canada, there's always a record clock in front of the judge's bench that keeps the time. And it only turns on when it's on the record. So he said the whole time they were in the proceeding, it wasn't recording. And then from there, it's just like this frustration of like not being able to give his evidence at this traffic hearing.
This is also his livelihood, right? He's a cab driver.
Yes.
And it's these tickets and everything like that are infringing on how he makes an income, how he lives in an extremely expensive city, you know, in Canada. Yeah.
Now he gets found guilty. He's like, well, this is bullshit. I didn't get to give my evidence. I didn't get to have my witness present. He then starts making complaints to the RCMP, and this, you know, long story short, ends up with a slew of different charges from starting just from various traffic violations, working his way up to utter threats, possession of weapons for a dangerous purpose. And he says, like, all these things are because he's been targeted. Now, I will say this, that as someone who has some knowledge of the criminal justice system, it is a fucking meat grinder. If you in Canada somehow find yourself on the wrong side of the criminal justice system, the system is designed to fucking draw you in. It's brutal. Like with the restrictions and probation they give you, like it is.
And why are all these motherfuckers on the street after instantly?
Because they've done minor things like decapitate people on fucking Greyhound buses and eat their flesh.
Yeah, like it's nothing.
It's not a big deal.
Right. Everyone knows you sign a waiver that when you get on a Greyhound bus, you are no longer human. You're actually technically cattle. If you ride on the Greyhound bus, you sign a waiver. Mm-hmm. You're not.
You don't have any human rights.
Yeah. No, Greyhound's don't have any human rights. In Canada, at least.
Is it Canada? Bus, no.
No. It's terrible.
So this guy is like, he's all of a sudden now he's finding himself with a slew of more charges. He's receiving threats from members of the HA that he says he's pissed off. And he now basically loses his house, his livelihood, and everything. And he fucking goes postal. So he writes this huge manifesto outlining everything that's gone wrong. He's like, I have the evidence. No one wants to fucking listen to me. He's like, I apologize to everyone, but this is the only way. I've packed my van full of 60 pounds of volatile explosive material. I'm going to park on the bridge until my demands are met. And if anyone comes too close to me, he's like, I'll introduce you to God. That's the plan.
You will meet God.
Yeah. Right? He does say like things like, if you're an emergency response vehicle, like an ambulance or a fire truck, you just hit your sirens, I'll let you go by. Like, that's fine. Well, but everybody else, and cops included.
People who don't know, the bridge that we have is divided. It's two lanes one way and three the other. So he's got it parked on the two lane.
Yeah.
I think.
To Kelowna.
Yeah, he's going to Kelowna, parked there.
To Kelowna, which is important, too, because like the nearest hospital for people in West Kelowna, Peachland, Summerland, like, is in Penticton.
It's almost an hour away.
Yeah. As opposed to, you know, if you live close to the bridge, like 10 minutes, not even.
10 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
So he says he sealed himself in the van. If anyone approaches, he's just going to blow it up. Unless his demands are met. At some point, the RCMP showed up and witnesses are saying they were yelling at like, hey, we're here to help.
He was with the van, though.
Yes, he was in it.
Yeah.
And as RCMP are like trying to communicate with him, he just gets fed up and he starts lighting a fire in the van. I guess RCMP rushed over, opened the doors of the van, grabbed him out, pulled him away. And the Kelowna
Fire Department swooped in. And save the fucking day, extinguishing
the bridge forever. Right?
No, but if it weren't for the fucking Kelowna Fire Department, they swooped in and saved the fucking day.
So then the car sat there while they had to wait for a like designated bomb squad to come from the Lower Mainland, which is 4 hours away, because they don't actually know what this guy had in there. So they can't risk moving it or anything. So he crippled the main artery in the Okanagan for 12 hours, right?
Yeah, and pretty much
that fucking thing is like an 80% fucking degree blockage.
Yeah.
We're talking artery scale here, 90% of the time. Like that thing, especially at that time in the morning, it's fucked
all the time.
It takes you to travel fucking, which normally takes you fucking 10 minutes, takes you 45 in the morning. It's a nightmare.
You know what I noticed today in Kelowna? I was driving around. I had to go to Rona, a couple other places. There's no cars. They're all trapped on the other side of the bridge. It was nice.
I was one of them.
The problem is West Kelowna. That's what's going on. We should just, you know what? The bomb should have went off safely so no one got killed.
Oh, fuck off. The you bridge, grew up in West Kelowna. I don't want to hear any of this slander.
I got out. That place sucks, man. The water sucks. Everything sucks about West Kelowna.
West Kelowna's nice.
Yeah.
It's cheaper to live.
It's all we can afford.
Yeah.
It's cheaper to live, no doubt.
So one of the interesting things in his manifesto is the last incident he had, he said the RCMP picked him up and said that he had sent emails saying he was going to kill himself. And he said, produce the emails. And the RCMP saying that he sent them emails that he was going to kill himself, they picked him up and had him locked up at the hospital under like a...
Yeah, he was in the McNair unit.
Yeah, some sort of like psychiatric observation for a couple days. And he was like, that's bullshit. I wasn't ever going to kill myself. I never sent emails. Show them. Send them to like release them. I never happened. And it's crazy to me that, you know, it's sad that you can have these people that kind of their mental health kind of falls to this level and they start having run-ins with the police. And there's no real help for them unless they hit the criminal justice system. The interesting thing to me is this isn't the first would-be terrorist that was fed up with not only BC's government, but the local government of the Okanagan. And now I want to quickly tell you a parallel story of a man named – actually, Andrew, you're related to him.
Yes. Yeah.
Eddie
Uncle
Haymore.
Eddie Haymore.
Eddie Haymore. So back in the 70s, Eddie Haymore – and his dad, who was a real estate agent, he was a bit of like people. What I've read about Eddie is you loved him or you hate him. And Andrew, fill in the blanks because, you know, if I'm saying something wrong or out, you know, yeah. Correct me. You know, people say you love him or hate
he's
him.
He's a Lebanese Dean Martin is what.
Yeah. Like super, 100%. super charismatic. But some people were like super abrasive. Like if you depend what kind of fucking on the kind. Side of the coin you were on.
This is going to be a frequent theme in this, and I'm going to be interrupting because you also got to remember that this was the Okanagan in the 70s, which was not a very kind place to minorities. Let's be honest here. Like, so a lot of people just did not like him strictly because he was Arab.
Yeah.
There was no minorities in the
70s. And his eyebrows
literally
gave
had
away.
Signs saying, like, fucking. You know, Japs not welcome. Like it's horrible. Like this is not a very multicultural city. There was three Lebanese families in fucking Kelowna for like until the early 2000s. I swear to God, and it was the Habibs, the Haymores, and the Abgushas. Like it's
so he's a bit of an entrepreneur and stuff, and his dad was a real estate agent. And in the 70s, he took Eddie went. And did a tour of an island on Okanagan Lake called Rattlesnake Island. Rattlesnake Island is like directly parallel from a place called Peachland. It's a super tiny little island. Anyone that's been to the Okanagan has seen it, knows about it, or lives there knows about it.
And knows that it's the the home of Ogopogo lives underneath the island.
Lives underneath. Yeah. But like one of the big things that it, like that not a lot of people know is it actually that whole valley looks a lot like Lebanon. From like Okanagan Lake to the fucking mountains, everything. It's very picturesque, just like Lebanon is. And I think that's what drew him to it.
Yeah, he said that. He's like, he stepped on the island and he's like, if this reminds me of home. And he instantly bought it. He bought Rattlesnake Island from the government. And he was like, you know what? You know, to Andrew's point, like he's like, the Middle East has such a rich culture and I want to introduce the people the Okanagan to it. So what better way than to fucking make a theme park? And he's like, I'm going to have a Middle Eastern theme park on Rattlesnake Island. And he was kind of taking advantage of the fact that this was on like rural land. So there wasn't any kind of like, there wasn't a lot of fucking hoops to jump through or anything like that. So like he could just do it. Like he did, there was no real government kind of standing in this way because of where this was situated until he got started. And the second he started building, he built a pyramid structure, a 9 meter tall camel statue, and a putting green, a 19 hole mini golf course mini he golf. Started building.
Yep.
Because when I think of the Middle East, I think of mini golf. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, right. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And ice cream, right? He was going to have one of those Turkish ice cream guys.
Yeah.
That's what the camel was going to be. The camel was going to have all your 32 different flavors of ice cream. Yeah. It's going to have
number one price.
Yeah, it was going to be great.
So no one was the wiser other than the people of Peachland. Now, Peachland's super small lakefront community, and they noticed that Mr. Haymore was barging all this equipment and stuff over to Rattlesnake Island from Peachland, which obviously, because Peachland's, especially in the 70s, was a super sleepy little town.
It was like 300 people in the 70s.
Yeah, they're kind of like, what's going on here, right? So people started talking to Eddie and asking around, and Eddie was like, this is what I'm doing. I want to introduce the people of Okanagan to the Middle East, and I want to build this theme park where people can come and visit, and it's like stepping into Lebanon.
Well, and it, like, one thing too to know, like, when he first immigrated to Canada, he came to Edmonton, which was a really Alberta very popular spot for people to immigrate to, not the Okanagan at the time.
With lots of money.
Tons of money, lots of work. And like, he worked there as a barber. He, once he got his Canadian citizenship, like, he threw giant parties with belly dancers. People loved him in Edmonton. Like, he was super popular, and he thought, you know, he would have the same kind of impact here, but, you know, lo and behold, the Okanagan, not so much.
Turns out it was full of Hell's Angels and racists.
Yeah, we fucking a lot of white laundry here.
That's good. So Haymore, you know, he's telling people, and the mayor of Peachland is like, do you have permits? And he's like,
what do you mean by the permit?
Yeah, I don't this isn't Peachland.
No, I have camel. What do you want?
So he...
Do you want mini golf ticket?
Permit, I give you ice cream. You take free permit. Mini-golf. We are okay.
First nine, take back nine, you have to pay.
So the mayor of Peachland is like, listen, pal, you're not going to fucking ruin our sleepy little town here by barging in people to the theme park. Like, we're not going to have that. So like we're going to kibosh that. And Eddie basically was like, go fuck yourself. Like, this doesn't involve you at all.
It's my island.
I'm across the lake. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Well, the mayor of Peachland at the time was good friends with then premier, who the said bridge that was threatened to be blown up is named after, William Bennett. So he contacts William Bennett. And this is some of the most insane things. They start making documents for rural permits for Eddie. Like, they're like, you have to do this permit. It's new. You now have to do it. So at the cost of Eddie, he has to go out and pay for these permits for these special rural on an island. He had to do permits for new zoning permits for rural locations. He had to do permits for building on an island on a lake. Like, insane. Like, just there's a, he's just like, what? I'll do it. It's okay.
Like, I don't know what the exact wording is too. It's like, you know how you have like ALR land, which is reserved for like fucking farming.
They
made the island itself meant to be for grazing, for cattle and grazing.
Yes.
And it's a fucking rock island.
Yeah, there's literally, like, there's nothing on it.
The island is probably like 2 acres of land.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not big.
Not a single green patch on the fuck. The only green that was on there was the fucking from mini golf.
Yeah.
The only thing that's on Rattlesnake Island, because you can still go visit it, is pretty much just like these little like prickly shrubs. That's it. Yeah.
So this guy goes and he's like, you know what? Fuck you. Whatever. I'll pay for the permits. I'll pay for the studies. Whatever. It's all good. Each and every time he does one of these brand new permits that no one on rural land in the area has had to do before, he does them for the government. The government goes, denied. On the brand new permit they made for him, they go, denied. And so this begins a period of just absolute hoop jumping. They actually, at one point when he's trying to barge across equipment, they get police roadblock to arrest him. And they're like, this is trespassing. You're not allowed to use this for commercial purposes. And he's like, what? I've been using this forever.
It was the opening day. Like, he wanted to do like a test run. They had like 400 people there.
Yes. And they shut him down, and they had a police barricade, and they're like, nope, no one goes across. And they fucking ruined him. So he starts losing his mind.
He loses his family. Like, his wife and his kids move back to Edmonton.
Because he financially is in ruins.
Well, and he's obsessed with fucking winning. Like, he wants to win, as is his right in this situation. Like, he owns the fucking land.
So he's getting so fucking mad that he's just like, listen, I will see this to the end. That's how I knew he's your relative. Cause I can see you doing that. You're like, I'll
fucking die here.
I will die on this hill. I don't give a shit.
Doesn't matter.
Well, it's funny though. Cause you gotta take
it's called after death. All right. I don't give a fuck what you say.
You got to take into account that this man, like he's come to Canada from fucking Lebanon. Mind you, this is before the Civil War and everything like that, but Lebanon's still a fucking extremely volatile place. So he comes here and he's got these fucking Mounties boss around. He's like, listen, boys, like it's going to take more than that.
Yeah. So he starts, you know, slowly picking up various charges because he's, you know, every minister in different ministries are denying him for every kind of permit, building permits, sewer permits, water permits, anything you can think of. He's met with a roadblock that doesn't make any sense. So he's now going around being like, yo, the government, the police, they're all in cahoots to take me down. This is criminal conspiracy. And everyone's like, first off, no one believed Eddie. No one. Everyone's like, Eddie, calm it. Like, you're fucking losing your marbles. Your wife's left. You're losing your shit. You know, you got to chill. And he's like, no, I'm going to double down. So he turns to violence, as any sane person does. So he starts threatening local politicians, basically like, I know what you're fucking doing. You know, you're fucking, I know it's Bennett.
He parks something in the mail.
Yeah.
He parks his van on the bridge.
So he threatens, this is interesting because he's alleged to have threatened to send a bomb to blow up William Bennett. However, in a 1986 expose, there is not any evidence of that whatsoever taking place. He ends up getting 37 different charges, right? And so prosecution ends up, you know, he's in prison, he comes to court, and prosecution agrees to drop all the charges except possession of brass knuckles.
Aluminum brass knuckles.
Yeah. But
nice and lightweight.
So he's like, all right, we'll do this to trial. And then in a surprise twist, on the day where Crown's going to drop, they've agreed with his lawyer to drop all the charges. The Crown comes forward and they say, we actually want Mr. Haymore to be found not criminally responsible by the way of insanity, which, as we've talked about in Canada, is worse than a life sentence, because if you get found that, they can institutionalize you for as long as they want while they try to medicate you to sort you out. So
can they still do that to this day, or
it's still like the guy.
What do you think's happening to fucking our boy Roy Winters?
Yeah, that's what's happening next. So he's against this. He's like, fuck that. No, I'm not insane, but I'm also not guilty. The government's after me. They're after me, Bennett. He's losing his shit. Bennett! He's screaming at the court of Roland. So he gets forcibly institutionalized in a psychiatric ward, right? And he is fucking rattled. So I think he was there six months in a psych ward before they let him out.
Yeah.
And so he gets released and he hates Canada. He hates the Canadian government. So he moves back to Lebanon. And then, Do you think he let this fucking go, Dan? As an American, you think that he let this grudge go back to Lebanon?
I guess not.
No. He loaded up with five buddies. He got five buddies and he rounded up.
One thing that they don't say though is you know where he lived when he moved back to Lebanon?
No.
He rented a fucking apartment right across the street from where you're about to say he's going.
Okay. So
and not a lot of people know that. This is a fully intentional.
He rounded up five cousins, and I'm guessing he was renting a house across from the Canadian embassy, and he rolled in there with his five cousins with AK-47s, and he took 20 Canadians hostage. And his demands are, you know, this is it. And the quote, you know, give me my land back, give me some money, bring me my kids and tell the world that I'm not insane, which, you know, is a wild ask. I know. And he held the hostage for hours. And then finally, like, you know, demands were getting met. And he's like, oh, fuck it, whatever. he didn't face any charges in Lebanon because Lebanon at this time was insane.
Well, it's right before the like civil war is on the brink of
For taking people hostage with an AK-47, he was charged $200 fine.
That's reasonable. All right, buddy, $25, huh? $200? Okay.
He bartered his fine for sure.
So he bartered it down. So he, for the next 10 years, seemingly builds a case, doing FOIA requests, getting documents from the Canadian government. And in 1986, he returns to Canada, which he can do because the Canadian government couldn't charge him for a crime committed overseas. And Lebanon didn't charge him, so he's free to travel. So he comes back in 1986, and he fucking sues the British Columbia government in Supreme Court. And with all the evidence that he collected over the past decade, the judge finds that the BC government, the RCMP, and all elected officials did conspire to take him down. Exactly what he was saying.
Take down Rattlesnake Island.
Right?
Yeah. And they didn't want that mini golf course.
They seized the island, but because Canada has this thing where the Crown will not pay punitive damages, the court ordered that basically he was to be refunded the cost of the purchase and the cost of what he had put into Rattlesnake Island so far, which equaled somewhere in the ballpark of $400,000.
Did he not also build or was in the process of Airbnb?
Well,
wasn't he?
He used the money that he won from there to make a fucking castle.
The story I always heard was he built a castle because that was going to be like where people stayed and then he was going to barge him over.
The castle was built. I think that was the plan initially, but the castle was built after money from the settlement.
Oh, okay.
Haymore
Castle.
Is
the castle the one on the...
It never got finished, though. It
kind of. It ended kind up turning of? Into a place where they I don't know if... I think he lived there, but I don't think it ever turned into what he wanted it to, because obviously Haymore or Eddie's Island never came to fruition. Right. But then it just, like, they used to throw raves and shit there. Do you remember when we were kids? Like, that was the big thing. Yeah.
So he said later in his... When he was 85, he said, I'm not sorry for what I did. And people understand now that I've been vindicated, why I did what I did. And when he was asked, you traumatized people. How does that make you feel? He said, I explained myself and why I was doing it, and they all understood. So he complete vindicated, like everything that he was saying for years and years and people denied him was true. The government was conspiring against him at all levels, local, provincial, federal, RCMP were all conspiring against him, and it was true. And I was going to do a different story, but then because of Mr. Roy Winter and his post, it made me think of this other gentleman who was also insane and people,
but he won.
But at the end of the day, he won, and it was in fact true. So, listen, Roy's got a chance, is what I'm saying.
I don't think Roy's got a chance this time.
I don't think so.
He fucked up. Roy fucked up.
Yeah, you got to do it in a third world country. That's what we're learning here.
You want to do the major crime in a country where you're not going to get charged and then come back to said other country.
He only inconvenienced 20 people.
That's true. In the
embassy. Yeah. That guy inconvenienced hundreds. Yeah, Mr. Winter didn't people.
He probably had like 100,000 people just hung up today in some fashion.
If only it would have been tomorrow, though.
I wouldn't have to go to work.
It would have been fucking fantastic.
No, they were shuttling people across the any type of emergency service.
The fucking boat. I know. I would have had to go in.
They were driving nurses and doctors to the hospital. RCMP boat.
No. So my true tale was just a little government conspiracy. I thought it was kind of fitting with today's events in Kelowna.
To this day, if you're on Okanagan Lake, you can go to the island, and there's still the remnants of the mini golf course.
Yeah. Yep. So the government seized the island from Haymore and turned it into a provincial park.
And like when I was a kid, there was enough of the greens and concrete left and the holes were still that you could kind of still play. It was still like full. It was all fucked up. It wasn't real, but you could still kind of play. Yeah. And now it's been all like shifted and overgrown.
You gotta bring your own putter and golf balls.
Yeah, you bring your own shit. We used to do that. There was nowhere to tie your boat up though. So it was precarious. You had to like get out onto a rock and like get some bunch of like boat bumpers down.
Bite a couple
and just hope for the best. It wasn't a rough day or a boat would be thrashed. It's a cool spot though. If you're on Okanagan Lake, I'd jump out.
So that's my twisted tale.
You want to hear a story about death?
Yeah, better have a hook.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
About mysterious murder.
Yeah. Yep.
Sure.
By a liquid.
Okay.
Not liquid even a death. Human. Liquid death.
What no.
I was.
No, next. What else you got?
Next.
I know I prepared too. Would you like to hear a story about 10,000 raptors versus a military with machine guns?
Let's do the first one.
Okay.
Okay. Well, both are good. All right. For this story, I want you to picture a 2.3 million U.S. gallon tank. Holding,
it's a big tank.
Molasses.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And
there's a giant tank holding molasses. Because back, you know, this was, you know, 1919, way back. Mm-hmm. Molasses was
way back.
Right. This is world. This is
like a friend of a friend of a friend of yours.
Yeah. Wait, that's what I mean. Friend of a friend of a friend of a friend of your great. Whatever. Way back, you know, post-World War I, just before the Roaring Twenties, molasses was big, big, big money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was gold, baby.
Liquid gold.
Liquid gold.
So this is the story of, they call it the Great Molasses Flood or the Boston Molasses Disaster. Or some people call it the Boston Molasses Massacre.
Mud flood.
In a way, this is a mud flood. So you have this tank. Huge tank, the biggest tank ever built at the time to store molasses.
So it's like the Titanic of molasses tanks.
It's it's huge. You know, it's like 13,000 like, ton tank.
Never be broken. Indestructible, they say. Step up, give it a swing.
Right. So it's a molasses is a booming industry. You know, Boston's full of these factories, and this place was called the Purity Distilling Company. So they use molasses to turn to soda and to rum and to like molasses can be used for a whole bunch of
all stuff. That's good.
Yeah. All great stuff.
Yeah. Soda.
But there was, a new tank and there was, rumors.
I say sodies.
It's not soda.
Sodies. Let's get pop. A couple of sodies.
It's fucking pop.
Nobody says pop. Anyway.
It's pop here.
It's pop. It's always pop. Pop.
You say pop in the States or is it just soda or is it
soda?
Soda
in the States. It's pop.
Every time regional. I hear soda, no, I go soda regional. Pop.
Soda.
It's got the regions where it, actually like I saw a map of it the other day where the demographics like the regions where they say soda or where they say pop are shrinking like over the years it's shrunk now it's mostly soda down the south like from Georgia like into I think we're towards like Louisiana they call everything Coke. Yeah,
everything's Coke.
Yeah, everything's a Coke. Like every because I mean that's where Coke is made, Atlanta and like Georgia, like all there, like
yeah, but
everywhere around there they call
just like oh this is orange Coke. Got some orange like, Coke.
Yeah, they just call all the sodas
I got,
Coke.
I got
any
the
brown
mountain,
soda
mountain
is Coke.
Coke.
Yeah, I guess really? Like I didn't. Yeah, that's why I looked at. I saw it the other day. I was like, oh yeah, that's crazy.
That's weird.
Super weird.
So this giant tank, it might have looked sturdy, but there rumors began to circulate through the locals, the people that worked at the factory. That it was maybe made in a little bit rushed.
Skipping steps.
Made a little rushed, skipped a couple steps, skipped a little bit, maybe a layer or two of aluminum, you know, a little thin. So the big event happens on January 15th, 1919, around 12:30 p.m. A loud boom and a crack echoes through the factory and down the streets. Everyone in the neighborhood heard it. It was described. It's just like a, pretty much like a bomb went off.
I'm everyone thought. Do you know if like was Boeing in the fucking molasses tank industry before?
Sure the doors are blowing off.
It's been right at the start of you know fuselage manufacturing. Really, right?
Okay.
Not too far.
Yeah.
So this tank ruptures, sending all of the molasses rushing down the street at 35 miles an hour, oh up to 20 feet, miles, 35 holy miles, shit. Like 50K down
that's
the street.
That's the fastest molasses has ever moved.
Just smothering everything.
Well, because molasses in the tank is kept like,
it's gotta be hot, right?
It's warm, so it's easier to like pump and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
so it comes rushing out just like a fucking tidal wave, 35 miles an hour, 20 feet tall in some places. It crushed buildings, flooded homes. It like buried people in debris. And as the molasses rushed down the street, because we're in the middle of winter here, so
yeah, it's gonna start freezing
molasses.
So it comes out as a liquid. And as it starts to cool, it becomes like a thick, like sludgy molasses, and people and horses and animals of all types. Because at this time, 1919, tons of people still did horse and wagon, right?
Yep.
Cars were getting more popular, but still tons of people ripped around with a horse.
Yeah.
They say hundreds of horses and like 20 people died from the great molasses flood.
Molasses. What is a delicious way to go?
I was just gonna say, like, you know, Beerfest. You got Braden's fucking ancestors, like landfill, just fucking slurping up the fucking molasses before it could drown them.
You're like in between the fucking moments of terror of your impending doom. You're like,
I remember. Yeah, I remember hearing about the story, the molasses disaster. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's crazy. It took weeks to clean up, just like thick molasses
everywhere.
In January in Boston, so now it's frozen molasses on the streets.
You're like chipping it out of stuff, like chipping it out of buildings, off of buildings and stuff.
You want to know what's like more fucked up? 1919, they didn't just dispose of all that molasses. There's no way.
They reused it 100%.
100%. They're just like, pull the people out.
Throw it back. That's what kicked off the maple syrup industry. Boston's like, we can't ever use that shit again.
The downfall of molasses led to the rise of maple syrup, leading to the rise of the great Canadian maple syrup heist of 1970, whatever it was.
Cause and effect.
These events are all related.
Yeah.
Just imagine, though, you get killed. Like, what happened to Uncle? Well, he drowned.
Molasses.
The great molasses flood.
Dude, what a giant tank. Like, it wasn't, the tank was... And see, in my head, when I picture it, I just picture this giant tank outside. Like, but I imagine it was probably in some, like, a warehouse, right?
Think about those workers just fucking toast.
Just like the windows bursting open with just this, like, dark brown molasses.
Screws at first. Ping, ping. They're like, it's going to blow.
Coming out the windows and stuff. Just like,
they actually have, in Boston, they have the great molasses flood fucking museum where they have the workers that look just like the mosquitoes in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it's so attracting amber, just like as Boston's Pompeii.
Go to Boston Science World.
Yeah, so much molasses in this one block of the city, or this one area of the city. They had to bring in the army to clean it up. Like, it was a whole fucking thing. I think it's actually one of the biggest, like, natural, like, casualty disasters in American history.
It's a real crazy story. It's insane.
Molasses.
Gotcha. Molasses.
How do you have, though, like, can you really count that as a natural disaster? What is natural about keeping that
gravity,
much molasses?
The force of gravity rushing that molasses down the street is natural.
I really like the idea of it moving slowly instead and getting people are like, no.
Like the blob.
No, there's like that person who's like screaming. The person's screaming as the waves like solidify. They're like, no.
Or even slower than that. Like someone comes up and they're like, what is this? And they touch it and then they're like fingers stuck in it. They're like, oh no. And they just slowly like, oh. It tastes so good.
It's wild. The company was eventually held liable. They had to pay out a bunch. I don't think they survived.
Yeah, 1919, it probably cost them like $14.
We'll say 22 casualties.
So 21
people. 21
people
dead.
21 people and hundreds
of
horses dead from molasses.
That's crazy. The cleanup must have been
just a cheap.
There's
a cheap tank. Just a cheap tank, just ruptured. They attribute it to, like, just the day before, they'd pumped in a nice hot load of molasses into the tank.
It's like the temper differential. Yeah, right? Like,
yeah, and then the molasses that was in there was been a little cooler, and then it was, I guess it was really cold before this happened, and then it warmed up to, like,
so, like,
you know,
a
+2. And then it just, like,
blevy.
Just that expansion in the metal just popped it.
Oh, my God.
And this is, you know, 1919, where before, there's not a lot of inspections, I don't think, for this stuff.
Not a lot of quality assurance.
We just went from World War I to, like, let's build everything as fast as we can, as good as we can make it, see what happens. And then that continued on post-World War.
Only to get taken out by molasses. Imagine you getting home from World War I and then you go by molasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, you single-handedly, like you rescued like a whole platoon yourself. You're a war hero.
You take
hero
out the Red Baron, and then you're dealing with fucking molasses.
All right, we had a couple more stories, but let's take a short beer break, reload. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by Moo.com.
Hey, dudes, if you're like me and Zell, man, we totally think cannabis should be accessible, affordable, convenient, and transparent, dudes.
Have you heard of Mood.com? They sell federally legal weed, gummies, everything you'd expect from a dispensary, and shipping it right to your door. No Budweiser sweats required.
I'm serious, dudes. You can now get high-quality, 100% federally legal cannabis products delivered right to your door without ever leaving your couch.
And you can get $30 off your first order at mood.com/alien with promo code alien.
Best of all, dudes, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but dudes, as I mentioned, listeners get $30 off their first order, man, with promo code alien, man.
That's right. Head over to mood.com/alien or click the link in the show notes. Check out the dispensary and let Mood help you discover and expand your perspectives.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back.
Right. So I got one. What are we doing? Is it specific order, I guess?
No, no order. Just grip and rip it down.
Yeah, I got this tale. So for in honor of, I guess, Chinese New Year, which is going to be on the 29th this year, I have a story that comes out of Beijing from the 90s. So November 14th, 1995, bus 375 pulled out of the Yuanmingyuan bus terminus. And so its final destination was a place known as Jiangshan, which is also known as Fragrant Hills on the northwestern part of the city. And
For my sake, would you mind mispronouncing some of these words?
I'm pretty sure I did.
Yeah. Well, but like make it bad. Cause
can you white laundry them up a little bit?
Yeah. Just like marble mouth them a bit.
So on board this bus at the time were a driver, the bus driver, a female conductor, the person who like walks up and down the aisles and takes your tickets and stuff like
95.
That. I guess an unusually cold, or probably like usually like cold around November in Beijing. With also like high winds were blowing, so extremely uncomfortable to be out like waiting at the bus stop or something like that. So it made a stop at Southgate and then went to like this area called the Summer Palace. And then it picked up four passengers at the time. And I think most of this story comes from one of the passengers, which was a young man. Then there was also an older lady. And then there was also a young couple that was on the bus at the time. So the young couple sat towards the front of the bus, which was just directly behind the driver. They had the old lady and the boy, young man, like sat like on the opposite side, like near the doors, where the man was like sitting behind the older lady. Now, as the bus drove, its nightly route, and it's pretty much like, and it was making towards its final stop at Fragrant Hills. They said that the bus driver kind of had the headlights on. And then as they came like around a corner, they saw like this group, like a trio of like three people, like on the side of the road. And they were kind of like waving their arms to kind of flag down the bus. They weren't at like a bus stop. So normally the bus wouldn't have stopped, like they're not obligated to, but because it was so cold and the wind was starting to pick up, the bus driver decided to, you know, was like, okay, well, you know, we can stop for these people. We'll pick them up. And when they got closer, they saw that it was like the trio. It was like, it was two men standing on one other who was kind of like propped up between them, like, and they were holding him like across their shoulders. And so they were bringing in, so they brought him onto the bus, like this third person onto the bus. So his, that person in the middle had their head was like kind of bowed down and they couldn't really make out the face, but they could also make out what was kind of unusual is that this group seemed to be dressed in like kind of traditional historical garb. Like they had like kipaos on, which are like the little like kimono, like, like from look like out of like the Qing dynasty kind of outfit. So while they kind of got on and they took their place, like they went all the way to the back of the bus and they sat down and, you know, people were kind of giving them the side eye cause they looked very strange, not only for their garb, but also their skin complexions seemed to be like unusually pale at the time. So they were kind of like, okay, people were worried. And I guess the conductor kind of noticed the worried glances of the people like looking at these people. And they kind of said like, well, you know, maybe they're actors like coming from one of the playhouses. Like they look, maybe they just got kind of drunk, which could, you know, happen. But it was just like, so they're like, all right.
Probably wondering where they got their sun visors from. Being like, fuck, that's a good look.
So as the bus continued on its route, I guess the bus stopped at one of its next stops, like, and then second to last stop, and like the young couple got off the bus, and then they had like about three or four more stops. And then the bus driver and the female conductor apparently were just like, they're chatting, laughing, like they weren't really paying all that attention. But suddenly the older lady like turned around at the young man, and the young man, taken aback. So she suddenly turned around and started yelling at him and like insisting that. She started yelling at him like, oh, you took my wallet, like, you started hitting him that and insisting that he had stolen her wallet, like taken something of hers, and she kind of, you know, the man's like, you know, denying that he did anything and tried to like kind of fend her off because she's like, she's bad, you know, she's batting at him and stuff like that, and just making a really, really big scene about him stealing his wallet. And so the young man like stood up on the bus and started arguing with her, but the old woman like stood up and she wasn't gonna take any of his shit and like grabbed him physically by the collar and then started yelling at the bus driver to stop the bus because she's gonna take him to the police station at the next stop. And so so the bus driver is like okay, well, I've had enough of this, and stops, and then you know, lets them off the bus, and the lady like pulls him off and drags the young man off the bus. And the young man like remembers the lady, you know, well, he's like, okay, well, if we're going to the police station, like, okay, take me to the police station. Where's the police station? She's like, there's no police station around here. He's like, what? and he's like, she's like, but I just saved your life. And he was kind of taken aback, and he's like, what do you mean you saved my life? She's like, those three people on the back of the bus, like, those were ghosts.
Oh my god.
And she's like, what do you even talk about? She's like, ever since when they got on the bus, I had been watching them, and when one of the times when I turned back, like there had been like a gust of wind through one of the windows that had like lifted up like the bottom of one of their garments, and she's like, and they didn't have any legs.
Oh my god.
So you're like, okay, like in this story, like the young man, he says this, now
I could deal with no legs, it's fine, but what else?
So I could be like, okay, well, you know, they got off the bus, like maybe, you know, she's just, this lady's just like whatever, it's whatever crazy. But the next day, bus 375, that very bus that they're on, failed to report to the station.
Was parked across a bridge.
It's a ghost bus.
Sideways.
Not across a bridge, under a bridge. Oh. Because apparently they found the bus, and the Beijing Evening News reported that bus had been found in the Miyun Reservoir, 100 kilometers from Fragrant Hills, like underwater. And then, but in that bus, they found three badly decomposed bodies. They said the bus driver, the female conductor, and then one unidentified male corpse in there.
Decomposed pretty quick. No.
So these ghosts. So that ghosts. That was like, I don't know. And the, you know, there's other kind of like mysteries apparently that surround this event. They're saying that the bus wouldn't have had enough gas to drive all the way to the Miyun Reservoir.
So like they would have had to fucking fill up.
Yeah, fill up quick.
And there's some reports that say when they opened the petrol tank, they found it was filled with blood.
Oh, shit.
And even though, and like, and what Andrew mentioned, what Andrew mentioned, how big was the tank?
It's a bus.
It's a bus is a fucking 400 liter tank. That's a lot of blood.
What Andrew mentioned,
the bus is off baby blood.
the accelerated rate of decomposition, that was also noted, because like even if it was summer, they said it shouldn't have been that quick. Like there's no way they would have decomposed. They said that, you know, the autopsies on the bodies confirmed that there was no intentional meddling with them. So that question still stands. Like, how did those bodies decompose so fast? And then when the police did a inspection of the security camera tapes at each of the entrances leading to the reservoir, but they didn't see the bus on any of them. And everything just seemed normal. Like they didn't even see that bus on the footage at all. And
there's
like,
ghost bus drives underwater.
Unsolved Parked to this there. Day.
I mean, the weird thing to me bust. Is like, I'm like, the fact that this lady just saved that young man, she's like fucking, she didn't give the heads up to anyone else. You know what I mean? Like,
they were the two last on the bus.
Oh, so the bus driver. Well, fuck the bus driver then.
Yeah.
No, he's a ghost too.
Maybe they were ghosts. He must have been the bus driver and the conductor.
That was
were
the ghosts. They were death. In on it. Death was the guy driving the bus. For sure.
I know.
Or maybe it was just a corpse already.
Happy right? Chinese
reanimated. Reanimated corpse.
Is it You're the Snake?
It is You're the Snake.
Not as cool as you're the dragon. Like
yeah,
us,
what a fucking shit year to follow up. You're snake, the dragon. You're the dragon. Snake.
It's pretty way better. That's pretty accurate. I think you're the snake fits.
The snake.
Yeah, it's pretty snake. It's gonna be a snaky year.
It's a snake. It's gonna be a snaky few years. Yeah, snake.
Oh, yeah. Snaky year. Yeah.
Dan's it's over here fucking with smirking with your tariffs. Yes.
Yeah, speaking in parcel tongue.
Suck my fucking ass here.
25% flat tariff across the board, Dan.
Dan, you happy about that, Dan? Huh?
It's me.
Happy about ruining Canada for us, Dan?
You like that, Dan?
Yeah. Huh? So I hope you don't plan on doing any hiking, buddy.
Yeah.
You can't be coming over the border anymore.
I dare you to try to go get a hiking permit.
It's not happening.
All right.
Don't worry, I'll just go take 20 Canadians hostage at your embassy. Hey, it's fine.
For the threat of national tariffs against Canada, we go with, you can't hike here, all right?
Yeah. No more hiking.
Take a hike.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't hike
nice
here.
Nice hike.
In your own country, bitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all right. Funny. All right.
So I want to apologize ahead of time.
It's about to be super racist.
Profound ignorance when it comes to pronouncing South African names. It's hard.
Racist.
Maybe. That's good. So this takes place on October 5th, 2017. Tateke Kotsai, a 61-year-old father of six who lives in Stellenbosch, South Africa, was rushed to the hospital having severe abdominal discomfort. Not too long after being at the hospital, he went for emergency surgery. Of what, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, maybe he had an abdominal, like a GI blockage, something like that, kind of tracks, but we don't really know what he was getting surgery for. But nonetheless, it was quite extensive. He was then transferred to a ward in the Stellenbosch Hospital following the operation to recover. So go into like a rehab, basically. The nurse who was tasked to check on him came in at around 5:15 in the morning, check on him, found Tateke to be doing well. They had a conversation. He declined any food, anything like that, because it was pretty early. And she basically said, you know, like, I'm going to make up your bed. I'm going to go grab some linens and I'll be right back. So she peeks out of the room, usually at the cart with all the bedding and all that stuff. Like, it's not very far away. It's very close. You know, it's usually in the middle of all the rooms. grabs the bedding, comes back within seconds, notices that TK is no longer in his bed. Okay, bathroom door is closed. He's probably in the bathroom. So she goes ahead, you know, cleans up the bed a little bit, makes everything fresh for him, leaves. Comes back 15, 20 minutes later to check on him. Notices that, you know, he's not in his bed still. You know, the sheets, blankets are all made just like the way she left them. And the bathroom door is still closed. So it's like, okay, well, you know, maybe something happened in the washroom. Could he have a syncopal event, something like that, you know, post-surgery? Tracks. So she goes, bangs on the door, you know, Mr. Goatsai, can you hear me? Nothing. So she's like, okay, we got to get in this bathroom. Gets the door open. No one's in there. So this entire time when she left that room, like he would have had to cross her path to basically to leave. She was that close. Right. So out of nowhere, it seems like TK somewhat vanished. His brother, Christmas Kepwane, said that the surgery that had been performed on his brother rendered him completely unambulatory, unable to walk, right? Like it was an extensive surgery. And despite blatantly unusual circumstances of his disappearance, the hospital kept the event under wraps for 2 days, presumably just launching a very quiet search for the missing patient. You know, so it took 2 days for them to reach out to the family. So they call the family on October 7th and basically say, hey, like, is there any chance TK is at home? You know, he's been missing for 2 days. We don't know where he is. The family, understandably confused and like fucking panicked, rush over to the hospital being like, no, he's not here. Like, you know, so the family, pardon?
You're like, what do you mean? He's there.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So the family searches the hospital grounds everywhere, you know, staff's looking, they're unable to find him. One of the nurses, presumably the one who had stepped out to grab the linen, stated that the last time she had seen him was at about 5:15. One day later, the family returned to the hospital, this time accompanied by police, to try and find out what had happened to their relative. But a full-scale police investigation and search rendered fucking nothing. They couldn't find him. On October 20th, 2017, 15 days later, since the disappearance of TK, construction workers tasked with renovated and isolated and currently unused portion of the hospital opened up the ceiling. And they, you know, right, you know, you see the ceiling joists and there's that little, it's almost like an attic space, right? It's that small little space. You know, one of the workers climbs up the ladder and he's got a headlamp on and he's kind of looking up, you know, in that void space. Maybe, you know, doing some lighting, anything, something like that. And all of a sudden, he sees crammed in the far corner of the roof in the ceiling area was TK's body.
Ooh, not TK.
Okay. The family was contacted.
They had the headlamp on them.
Well, totally. So his family was contacted once again by the hospital to come on the 27th and discuss what happened to him and how the investigation into the matter should proceed. His brother, who is struggling with the cost of burying his brother, was the source for this article that I read, noted that the family had been under the impression he was safe where he was. And obviously that's a reasonable expectation, you'd think, right? Like a family member's in the hospital. According to a further source, the hospital had performed an autopsy on TK's body and had contacted family once again. They told them that their relative had not died due to complications of the abdominal surgery and vaguely implied that his death was not from natural causes. His family was also apparently given the impression that he was found to have been placed in the ceiling already being dead.
Oh, fuck.
Okay. So a couple things like to touch on with this. Right, like this is a drop ceiling, like at most hospitals, right? With those fucking those shitty, flimsy fucking
They push the
plasterboard. Is it plasterboard? What is it called?
Yeah,
right. Like they're like drywall kind of.
Yeah, they're like it's not strong. Fiberboard of some kind. Like that's there's no way you'd be able to fucking like climb and put yourself up there after an extensive surgery like that. No. Right, like having the upper body strength to pull yourself up.
Was he in like on the T-bar ceiling?
Or yeah, how was he was like crammed in the ceiling.
Yeah, but that T-bar ceiling is not strong enough to really hold.
No.
There's usually tracks.
He was in the joist, is what I understand.
There's usually tracks on the T-bar that you
can. Oh, he was like slung over a joist. Yeah.
I remember in when we were all in high school, we used to climb up in there. Like, we'd climb up on the lockers and then go up there, and there was tracks that you could walk on. And because I remember Ryan Zizelenchuk stepped off the track, fell through the roof.
Oh, he's probably walking on. You're probably walking on the joist then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's... You're walking on the joist. He stepped off.
So, pretty bizarre. No real understanding in how he got up there. It sounds like he was potentially murdered and put up there, but like something super bizarre, that
random place,
you know, would never really like, yeah, super random. You doubt, you know, like this wouldn't happen again. But on May 10th, 2019, an accident on an otherwise normal day would lead to a bizarre and tragic turn of events for South African resident Sandy Sabia. Sandy, a 53-year-old constructor who was helping his neighbor with a house repair, when a wall suddenly collapsed, fracturing his femur. Family members rushed him to Mahatma Gandhi Memorial Hospital, located in Durban, which is in South Africa. After an assessment and initial treatment, the medical provider recommended a transfer to Addington Hospital for an orthopedic specialist appointment. However, before he would be transferred, when a nurse went to check on him, he would disappear. Staff searched the hospital grounds for Sandiel, who had seemingly vanished. After the search proved unsuccessful, staff reported him missing in the South Africa Police Department. Sandiel would remain missing for 2 weeks. Hospital staff reported...
I don't like where this is going.
Hospital staff began reporting what they reported as an unbearable stench. Soon after, one staff member would discover a leak in a storage room dripping from the ceiling. On Friday, May 25th, Sandiel's decomposing remains would be found in the storage room ceiling.
Listen, I don't want to be critical of this hospital staff, but it's just like a...
But you should.
A like shame on you situation, because like, well, how come they didn't check the ceilings?
Well, this is a different hospital.
Oh, is it the hospital?
This is also in South Africa, but this is a different hospital.
Okay.
But think of this, 2 years apart.
Yeah.
And another South African hospital, basically the exact same story of somebody with a fractured femur, so who had been rendered unambulatory.
Yeah.
Got himself into a fucking ceiling, supposedly. Escaped his bed, which again, too, like this is South Africa. So unless these are in more of like the lower income areas, like these, there's security out the ass in these nicer hospitals. Right? Like, it's fucking bizarre. Like, what do you, is there a serial killer that works in these hospitals?
It's a ghost, a killing ghost.
A ceiling killing ghost?
Stuffs people up.
Oh, dude,
it's interesting 100%. Too, like, with
bringing you up there.
Imagine being able to get, like, you'd imagine, like, this is a grown man. Even a small man would be 50 pounds? Being able to get them and jam them up in the ceiling without wrecking any of the roofing or anything like that?
Without wrecking the roofing,
you have to kill them first, too. Like,
yeah, you have to kill them first.
I imagine.
Like, those guys weren't dead. They weren't, like, they had emergency surgery, but they weren't, like.
I don't even think Sandiel had his leg. Because I was trying to look at him, like, if he had had his surgery already, he would have had a rod placed, you know, in his femur. So he probably, like, despite pain, he probably could have ambulated on his leg. Yeah. But
can you just say walked?
Walked, sorry. It's a medical fucking story. I got to use medical terminology. I thought that was a common word.
I've never heard that word till today.
Ambulatory? You've never heard that?
Never.
Yeah. It's called ambulatory care in the hospital, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't know it meant you moving.
You could walk.
I had no idea.
Unambulatory means you can't walk.
Didn't know. News to me.
You do.
Yeah. I've learned something.
The more you know.
Yeah.
Well, they call it an ambulance and not an unambulance then.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, most people call fake, you know, they fake call the ambulance, so.
Yeah.
They can still walk.
Hey, listen, they can walk. It's fucking great. That might be my first assessment question. Can you walk? Perfect.
Let's can you go. Walk? All right. Yeah, all right. We'll take care of you.
Yeah.
Wild. No one knows what happened.
Nobody. Fucking, no inclination. So some people talk about deaths. A serial killer that worked, you know, worked in one hospital. And then obviously, like, it's pretty common to transfer between hospitals.
and stuff people in ceilings.
It's pretty common to be a spontaneous teleportation serial killer.
Some people talk about maybe like they had adverse side effects from the medications, the pain drugs and stuff, but I don't buy
that.
Climbing a roof and die. Like,
and then you got to drag a body
up a ladder. Cause I mean, in a hospital, the ceilings are probably, what are they?
Dead weight too.
10 feet.
The guy's 10 feet plus.
So you have a 10 foot ceiling plus above the T-bar and the joist. You probably have like 12 feet to get that body up in the ceiling, jam it up there.
It has to be a monster, so it doesn't fall through.
The guy was murdered. They were murdered. Serial killer.
But that guy's got to be like an absolute monster to like drag dead weight up into the ceiling and just stuff him in there.
Anyone checked with the 6'9", 400-pound simpleton janitor?
Yeah.
Worked there.
You mean the guy from True Detective?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is one of those stories where it's like, almost every single like rational like thought process you could be like, maybe this is what happened, doesn't make a lick of sense.
Nope.
And how you would do it and how you would execute it.
I don't know.
Very weird.
It's fucking super weird.
Yeah, but you're not a 6'9" monster man.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody would automatically suspect that guy. Like you just military press him into the ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, who could have done this? And he's like, I don't know.
Shrugs his shoulders.
Yeah.
Hold the door.
He's there, like, he's just like in like a fucking freezer, like a fucking stand freezer. Just like, I don't know. Like,
buddy, they gotta start checking the roofs to all the hospitals in South Africa.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Super weird.
It's like a strange tale.
That's a twisted tale.
That's a twisted fucking tale right there.
It was twisted, yeah.
Brought to you by Twisted Tea, not really.
You got it. That's why you always, whenever I go to the hospital, and I've been there a lot for cat bites, you always got to keep your head in a swivel whenever I'm there.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Always.
Stay the fuck away from the ceilings.
Right? I know they're trying to harvest your organs, right? Yeah. In a hospital.
These guys, organs were intact.
He came in dead.
Right?
He's an organ donor too. What do you know?
Cat bites kill you.
Yeah. You know, we needed two kidneys, a heart, a lung. Just today, actually, this happens to be this is good.
It's like he was already dead. He drove himself to the hospital. He was already dead. Yeah, it's weird.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, you know the thing with bears, like you shoot them in the head and they don't die for like 20 minutes. Yeah,
no, he died in a Tesla. Tesla drove him to the hospital. Tesla's so smart. He knows that they know when the owner has died. They just drive you to the hospital.
Didn't they have that feature? Didn't they try to sell that feature where it was like if it detects that the person's unconscious or something, it will pull over? I can't remember. There's some.
I mean,
I
wouldn't
doubt it. Driving things.
It'd be way more efficient than ambulances. I can promise you that.
Yeah, there's way more of them too.
Oh yeah, it'd be way faster. You don't have no wait time. You just go right there.
You put that seatbelt on. It's like that's some type of like fucking like heart strap, like a whoop strap kind of knows exactly what's beating in there.
Oh, the heart stops. Siren. Yeah. Like, remember like Inspector Gadget? Well, the siren just pops out of the hood of the car.
Watch your Apple Watch.
Perfect.
No, I think I think they should be rigged that if you go unconscious, the Tesla just goes 100 as fast as it can and just launches you off a cliff. Woo! Like shouldn't have slept. That's what happens. No one should be allowed to sleep until we can all sleep.
Well, some twisted tales this week. We had a few heavier weeks. We thought we'd fucking
loosen it up a bit.
A couple twisted tales.
Mm-hmm. Murders.
Some government conspiracies.
Molasses floods.
Some molasses floods. Some fucking ghosts. Ghost bus. Serial killer on the loose. What year were those murders?
2017 and 2019.
Oh, it's fresh. It's still fresh.
Why do you say that? I thought it was like 1930.
Thanks for listening. I said the dates.
I didn't hear the dates.
I remember you said them, but I had to ask.
Brayden was busy over there sniftering his wine or whatever. Yeah.
Deep throat in the fucking neck of the bottle. Yeah. God, I hate just that. Like, I just fucking hate that.
He's
so
in
much.
There enjoying the aroma.
I hate it so much.
Just be you, buddy.
Brayden's
just
like tongue in the entire room of that glass.
You gotta
like,
taste the wine, man.
Yeah.
You gotta let it aerate. You gotta taste it in the back of your throat.
We gotta Gotta give a shout out to a couple people here. A couple beauties went over to alientheorist.com. Hit that support tab.
Join the cult. Boys. Join the cult.
ATT
join
cult.
Baby. Let's go. Join the religion.
Join the Kool-Aid.
They went to alientheorist.com. They hit the support tab. This week we got Stephen Auckland. Hey, this is their name. It's not me. This looks like Lesbian Mongoose.
It's a great name. I saw that.
Sure.
That's kind of what I feel like now. That I've been
maybe that's an L. Maybe it's Lesblin.
No, it's probably lesbian. That's the, whenever, as a kid, when I was like, oh, I'm Lebanese, and be like, you're lesbian?
We got Steve. We got William. We got Mudflood. Mudflood himself.
Mudflood.
Sponsoring the show. We got Zachary Ward. And I believe that is it.
We got like 40 more, but we'll say them on the next one.
And listen.
We'll say them on the next one. Yeah.
Every cult you're going to join is going to want something, mostly money. At least ours is cool when you join. So help us out.
We only want money. We don't want to fuck your wives.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's it.
Get.
And we're not going to make you do a mass suicide either. We don't want that either.
Until we get to 10,000 listeners, then
we don't have uniforms. We don't make you buy. We don't make you buy a specific pair of Nikes or anything. Like, we don't have a set uniform yet.
It's really lax right now, right? So you want to get in now before we fucking hammering newcomers with rules.
we're going to send you a link which you have to click, which will give us the code to your crypto wallet, and then you can join.
Yeah.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
My heart goes out to you. All right, we'll see you in after.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.